Welcome. I'm Jenny Ray, an independent consultant with the Military Families Learning Network Family Transitions team. Our team provides education, resources, and networking opportunities for military family service professionals as they help military families build resilience and navigate life cycle transitions. We invite you to engage with us and your colleagues in conversations on military life cycle issues. In this Let's Talk Transitions podcast, I'll be chatting with Dr. Ellen Moore about her book, Grateful Nation, Student Veterans and the Rise of the Military-Friendly Campus. This book was published by Duke University Press in 2017. Our conversation centers on Dr. Moore's findings from narratives with Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans from California college campuses. These findings provide a glimpse into the academic struggles student veterans face as they transition into higher education.
Welcome, Dr. Moore. Thank you again for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
If you could, would you share a little bit about yourself with the listeners, you know, brief about your personal life, your professional, and then where your Grateful Nation book kind of got started?
Okay, sure. I'd be happy to. I was born on an Army base, on Fort Lewis, McCord Army Base. It was called Fort Lewis at the time, but my father was in the Army. And all of my siblings, almost all of the older siblings, were born on Army bases, and our early life was centered around military life and bases. But my father, I always remember that my father's experience was that he was educated in many ways through his military service and also through the GI Bill. Both of those things were true. And so all my life I've grown up with this idea that a great consciousness of military service as connected with education. So that was kind of in my consciousness always, and I always realized that I owed a debt of gratitude to my father and to his experience in the military for helping me with my understanding of education and pathways to education. So that's just a little bit about my background. Other than that, I have two daughters, one in college and one in high school, and I'm married, and so that's just my personal bio. One of my first jobs was as a journalist, and I spent a lot of time living in Central America, and during that time there were civil wars going on. So I spent a lot of time witnessing, observing, and thinking about the effects of war trauma on both civilians and combatants. So I had that background that I was thinking about how people and what people learn from war and what people learn from trauma. So that was sort of way in the background, and I decided after that to go into social work. So the bulk of my career my working life has been in clinical social work. I have a practice that concentrates on victims of trauma and people that have been through life-changing experiences, life-changing traumatic experiences. So that's been most of my professional work. I'm also, I teach classes in psychology, in education, in anthropology, and the psychology of trauma and healing is a specialty of mine. So I think that's my background.
Yeah, that's great. No, I appreciate you sharing all about yourself. It sounds like you have great experience, and they kind of all tie and weave in with one another. Maybe we could kind of go back a little bit and just kind of share with the listeners a brief summary or a recap about what the book is about.
I wrote the book Grateful Nation to find out what the experiences of student veterans on contemporary campuses was. I heard that there were a lot of challenges for recent veterans leaving the military, and many who had been to war had seen combat in Iraq and Afghanistan. So I was interested in their experiences. I was interested in the experiences of all veterans, regardless of if they had been to combat or not. But at the time I was doing the research, there were many student veterans that had just returned from those conflicts. So that was not by design, but that was a large part of the study. So they were coming from very extreme circumstances or coming from very structured military bases or training or practice into civilian colleges on the GI Bill. And I was interested in their experience. So I spoke to in-depth to the veterans. These are anywhere from 1 hour to 4 hours each. I did primary research at two different campuses in California, both in California, rural community college and an urban research university. So representing sort of two ends of the higher education spectrum, sort of the community college, which is the entry point for most veterans, as the research says. Most returning veterans on the GI Bill start at community colleges or online these days. But at the time, it was community college and a public research institution. And I also did research at 5 other colleges across the state. So I have a pretty broad sense of California. So I was interested in their experiences. What spurred the project was I had been going to events welcoming veterans on campuses, and I kept hearing that veterans were having a really hard time in civilian college, that the transition was really difficult, that there were many obstacles. I heard a statistic that 98% of all recruits sign up for GI Bill benefits. There's a lot of encouragement to sign up for GI Bill benefits and pay into GI Bill benefits for after discharge from the military. And of those 98% only of recruits signed up for GI Bill benefits upon entry into the military. And of those, less than 8% were using their GI Bill benefits. Now, I was shocked at that statistic. I was shocked and saddened. And that did spur me to say, okay, what's going on here? Sure. What's happening? It seemed to me a great injustice that people were signing up in part for, were enlisting in the military for educational benefits. Not all by any means, but many people were. And that they couldn't use those afterwards, or for whatever reason they weren't using those afterwards, seemed like it should be investigated.
Sure.
So that was the impetus of my research. I wanted to find out what was getting in the way of veterans being able to use their GI Bill benefits and complete their education and graduate. So those were the sort of initial questions. As I was doing my research, I did a lot of reading about what other theories were, why this was being theorized, why veterans were having a hard time. And one explanation I heard again and again was that college campuses were hostile to military veterans. Mm-hmm. And that surprised me because the campuses that I had been on, I didn't see that. And so I was just wondering why, you know, if that was more widespread. And so I was also, a secondary sort of goal for me was to find out if this was true, and if it wasn't true, one, what was going on for veterans? What was their experience on campuses? And two, why was this kind of trope? Why was this idea being propagated in the literature? Why did I keep reading it? Why were people saying this if it didn't seem to be true? That was a secondary part of my research. But what I consider the sort of heart and soul of the book, Grateful Nation, and also of my research is the voice of the veterans' voices and their experiences. And that, to me, that's what I find really, particularly that was motivating for me once I started doing in-depth interviews and started observing classrooms and being with the student veterans. That rose for me in my consciousness as the heart and soul of the book.
Sure. And, you know, getting to witness firsthand of what they're actually experiencing. And it's great that they were able to share with you, too, and open up. Because I've been reading, too, about student veterans that, you know, not a lot of them like to share because of the stigma, or they don't like to be pinpointed out that they are a student veteran, that they just kind of are there doing their business and they want to be on their way kind of thing.
Yeah. No, I did find that. I did find that for many veterans. Many veterans didn't necessarily want to be singled out or venerated for that matter. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say I found not many people talked about stigma. I mean, I didn't find only one veteran in all the vets that I spoke with said that he felt stigmatized. And he did say that. But most said that they just kind of wanted to be students. I mean, that they, being in the military is who they were, or part of it definitely forms part of their identity, but that they had sort of a new mission. They were interested in that. So I didn't find that people were concerned or experiencing much stigma. That was my finding.
Okay.
Perhaps in other places it was, but
sure.
Yeah. But absolutely, I just want to say that I feel very thankful to the vets for taking the time, because it was a lot of time they spent with me and they invited me into different spaces. And I am very grateful for getting the breadth of information that I got from them and their being willing to trust me.
Right. And that knowledge from their perspective helps not only you as a professional, but also others, you know, like us, or professionals who are working with military families, be able to get an avenue and a sense of what can we do to help? What can we do to make this transition a little bit smoother to higher education?
I appreciate that because that was my hope. My hope was that the book would help somebody.
Yeah.
And it would, that the vets might see themselves in it. Or if not, I mean, not everybody agrees with my findings, and that's fine. That's part of life. But I've heard from many student veterans saying that, yes, that reflects their experience as well. And so I'm happy about that.
That's great. And I'm sure it was good for them to also share and kind of navigate through that transition as well for themselves.
I think so. And no, I do believe so. In fact, some afterwards told me that the interviews with me, it was interesting. Some actually used the word therapeutic. People said, yeah, it's good to talk about this stuff. What they said is people don't ask about it, and they weren't sure. The student veterans or people were afraid to ask about it, or they didn't know what the silence was about. But this came up again and again, that people weren't asking them about their experience, which for many was the most foundational experience in their young lives. It affected them a lot. And to come to a campus where nobody's talking about it, pro or con, nobody's talking about the wars that they fought in. And that was very disorienting to them and felt very alienating to many. So I think they were just happy that somebody was interested and asking them in a respectful, curious, and, you know, in a way that allowed them to talk.
Yeah, I think that's super helpful to all of us. To kind of understand that and an avenue or understanding where we can speak up or how we can converse about this topic instead of being so quiet about it.
To me, the guidelines for those conversations were, because I was interested in their experience in the military and coming to the civilian campus and their experience in college, I was very interested in those transitions. And I had because I have IRB, you know, Institutional Review Board, human subjects, I had to put in an application to be able to do human interviews or interviews with people. I submitted my questions and I said that I would always ask these questions. They were semi-structured interviews, and I wouldn't necessarily address their combat experience, partly because it wasn't the focus of my research, but also because I didn't want to expose them to opening up feelings and then having to go straight back into their college classroom.
Yeah.
So that was my original intent, but I also decided and said this to the IRB that if people that I was speaking to at the vets went there, if they wanted to talk about their combat experience and how that related, I would absolutely follow up and I would go there. I would follow them rather than just say, okay, this is my study. I only want to hear about the class.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really helped the conversation because many said that they just didn't have spaces that they could talk about this stuff with civilians. And I think that was a significant piece, is that there was not everybody, but I think that there was in general a sense that many wanted civilians to know about their experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was helpful.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And I appreciated that.
Yeah. So it seems like from the findings, and I'd like for you to share some more of the more prominent findings that you found in your study in this book. But I also kind of just want to go back to what you were just talking about and how the student veterans maybe didn't have an avenue to share. And so do you think this was they didn't have an avenue to share with their peers or the faculty, or that the college campus didn't have any resources for them to talk about this? Or what are your thoughts?
What I found was that student vets absolutely spoke with each other. You know, there was definitely a sense of seeking out other vets on campuses for the most part. Most people wanted to do that, at least to have sort of a touchstone of a place to start. And in terms of resources on campuses, and one thing that I found that was most helpful for some vets was to have structures in place like Student Veteran Club. And those resources were different depending on the campus. In general, I found the large research universities had many more resources for this. And so it really depends on sort of resources available. And so I found that the more robust veterans clubs, not in all cases, but there were many, the larger institutions tended to have more resources for these things. And veterans clubs have helped many, many student veterans to come back to colleges. Not all. I want to say that one of my findings was that there were some student vets that didn't go to the vet club meetings and didn't identify with them. So that's true as well.
Okay.
But for many, having a veterans club on campus was a really good way to, you know, find community right away. It was sort of like a fast track to their military community on a civilian campus. As I said, for some, it didn't work because they were not interested in maintaining a military identity in civilian life. So it depended. I mean, one of the things that I found was that it can be hard not to try to reduce the experience of student veterans into a singular identity or singular experience. And that is a mistake. Mm-hmm. If we try to, you know, speak as if the experience is uniform, because it's not. Everybody is different and they have different needs. And that is the most important thing, I think, is to talk to the student veterans and to find out what it is they need and what it is they want and what will be helpful to them.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And do you think that would be a good suggestion, kind of an avenue for these student clubs to kind of, maybe I should backtrack just a minute. Are there staff members at these student clubs that kind of reach out to the student veterans, or is it kind of the opposite way around? The student veterans need to seek the support of the student clubs.
Well, at different campuses, it was different, but there were sort of both of those things happened. I saw at the large research university, there was a lot of outreach. In fact, every veteran was identified, was accepted into the university, and then the student vets club would call each one of them individually. They would have these marathon phoning sessions where they would call each accepted veteran, potential student at that university, and say, you know, we have a great veterans club here. We hope you really consider coming here. I call it Southwest University. We hope you consider coming to Southwest University. There's all these great things. Do you have any questions for us about it as a veteran? So that was a massive outreach effort, and there was staff on campus that really facilitated that. I have to say, I was very inspired and impressed by the staff on all the campuses that I worked with. I really felt like people were really trying to develop ways to bring in student veterans. Mm-hmm. And different campuses had different levels of resource in that. So at the university, there was a lot of resources being devoted to it, and a lot of peer support from the student vets that were there at the time. So that was impressive. And many of the vets subsequently that I interviewed at that institution, that was the reason I came here. Getting that phone call from that student vet was the reason I came here. And so I think that kind of outreach really works. It also gives prospective students a chance to really ask, you know, some hard questions. You know, what is it like? What is the level of work expected? What is the culture? You know, do you think I would fit into this culture, or are there any obstacles there, and what are the strengths? Mm-hmm. So I think having as full a picture as you can, you know, when stepping into a very new and different environment and with new and different expectations and roles is really important. It's sort of like forecasting what might I be able to expect here, what might come up here. So I think that is a really helpful tool for veterans thinking about coming to different colleges. If it's possible and they have the resources and time, I would really recommend going to the campus and checking it out and seeing what they think about it and making connections ahead of time.
Sure.
Because connection is, in my research and what I found, is like having a connection, having a human connection, and somebody to talk to share successes and also to share challenges, because that is going to happen. There are going to be successes, there are going to be challenges, and it really helps to have sort of a cultural guide and somebody that's, you know, a peer that has been through it before.
Definitely. Finding somebody who's a like other, someone who is, you can share your stories with and be able to kind of feel that sense of a belonging.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, at the same time, one of the things I found that student vets appreciated, many student vets really appreciated, was coming into a situation that did have a lot of diversity and that they were kind of stretched in their understanding. But I think it really helps to have a touchstone, to have some folks that you can use a shorthand with, and you can use the acronyms and people understand that and understand your experience. But also that from that place, you can reach out and make new relationships.
Yeah, I think that's very helpful. I think, you know, as humans, we all need somebody to be able to, like what you said, shorthand with. We need somebody to just lay it all out there, because we have our days where we have our challenges and our struggles, and we need that support from that person that you can just openly share with.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Kind of piggybacking off of that, what were some of the most common obstacles that the student veterans shared about in the interviews?
Well, some of the obstacles had to do with just just the role transition. I mean, a lot of the difficulty was in the transition from going from a very highly structured environment, often, and if they were coming from combat zones, sort of the learning curve was very steep and could be very lethal. That is to say that they had to learn how to function under high stress and the stakes were very high. Mm. So coming from that environment into a college campus where for many it just appeared that the kind of learning going on there was disconnected from reality. Many people described it as a fake world. I mean, a lot of the students that came back and said, it's all fake here. It's not real. And so I think that was an obstacle at first, but I want to say that that's a transitional obstacle. That's going to be an obstacle for anybody coming from one very defined world into another.
Yeah.
So, I learned over the course of time that these are not immutable problems, and it's not a problem that is the fault of anybody. It just is a transitional acculturation issue, and that often that's not a linear process. It's not that you say, okay, I am in the military, now I am a student. You know, you don't just declare that and it happens.
Yeah.
It's a human process that takes time, and we're two steps forward, three steps back sometimes, but the trajectory is towards transition and towards acculturation, and I believe ultimately toward support and success. That's my belief, because I've seen that with the proper support that people have on campus, people can really be successful and master their new environment, master their new mission. Many people thought of it as a mission to be accomplished.
I like that military-like terminology, a mission.
Yes, and it's important to be able to, that is, people have been thinking in those terms, and that is their worldview, and it's important to be able to bring that worldview and see your next experience or your next mission.
Yeah.
And it, to me, it's all a human process. It's all sort of a normal process. There's nothing that's mysterious about it. It's very human and very doable, ultimately, with support. So another obstacle that I saw that was real, that many of the veterans said that what they missed most was this sense of camaraderie, of bonding with each other and with the structure. And so that when one goes from a very highly structured, very dependent on your fellow military members or fellow service members, where logistics, where movement, where mission, where everything is connected and relies on each other, to going to the world of civilian student, which often just very interpersonally competitive, intellectually competitive.
Yeah.
And I think there is often the assumption that this is like an easy thing from staff and also from students, that this is just an easy thing to do, like there's no explanation necessary, that you don't need to sort of tell people the steps and how to do things, which I think is a big fallacy. I think that is not true, first of all, and it's also not helpful to just assume that people can figure it out. Because people can figure it out, but it often takes a long time. Nobody's sort of born with this knowledge of how to function in the academy. And I think it's helpful to have those practices and the expectations really spelled out, which to different degrees, different campuses might do that. I think that one of the functions of the Veterans Club that I observed was exactly that, was unpacking the expectations and the roles and the ways of being that are helpful, the ways of being that are less helpful on civilian campuses. So sort of acting as cultural guides and academic guides was really helpful. That peer support was often very helpful. Now, for the people that didn't connect to the Veterans Clubs for whatever reasons, and there were some really good reasons why people chose not to go, for them, it was good reasons, there weren't a lot of other spaces to find that. So in that sense, it might have been harder for them in some way. Okay. And I'm not saying that everybody should join a veteran club. I'm just saying that it seemed like there was a certain level of support that was offered, that if people didn't connect with the vets clubs, they often, you know, didn't have access to that.
Sure. I can see that. From your perspective, what do you think that professionals could do, you know, military family service professionals specifically, or even the educators and faculty, university staff, all those people involved, help these student veterans, you know, those ones that are not wanting to seek out the Veterans Club, or even just the whole student veteran population in general? What do you think they could do to kind of help, you know, help with this transition, these transitional pieces, and also with the supporting of the acculturation?
Yeah. This is going to sound very basic, but I really believe that one of the most important things is to just meet the student where they're at. And this goes
goes for student veterans and it goes for all students as well. Sure. But to find out what the student is looking for and you know, try to individualize as much as possible the experience for them. I know it's not possible for everybody to recognize that as a teacher would, I've been a teacher, and to recognize that every student comes with different experience and everybody comes with different abilities, and to try as much as possible to assess in the most human way what it is the student needs and what it is the student wants to talk about. Mm-hmm. That is not to assume that student vets don't want to talk about their military experience, but also not to assume that they do want to talk about it or write about it. An example is that many of the vets talked about their English 1A, you know, a class that many of them didn't want to take, you know, basic writing in English and literary criticism and things like that. So, but many said that that was the place where they had the chance to write about certain experiences and sort of work through certain experiences that they've had in the military. And they did not want to share it in the class as a whole at first, for sure. But when they shared it with the teacher and the teacher responded in ways that were affirming to the students, they felt really heard and seen and empowered to reach out. So an example is one of the vets that I spoke with had written an essay. He hadn't wanted to talk about his military experience, but he wrote an essay for his community college English teacher, and she asked if she could submit it for an award, and he said yes. And so he won this award on campus, and it was transformative for him. It was like people were hearing his experience and seeing him in all its complexity. I mean, that's the other thing that I would really urge everybody to approach this with, is to recognize that people have really complex and often contradictory feelings about their experience, and to be able to hold all of that, and to be able to not have expectations that somebody needs to act like a hero or even see themselves as a hero or conceptualize missions as particularly good or bad, you know, but just to recognize the complexity of the human experience and to allow the vets to come to that themselves in a way that is most respectful of their process. So for this vet that I was talking about, he was not ready to share publicly, and he got the support from his English professor, you know, to see that this was a message that could really move other people. And so he was also, I think that was a large part of his identity as a veteran, was to help other veterans, I mean, and to help civilian society. So there was a very strong sense with many of the vets that I spoke with. Many of them talked to me because they wanted to help other veterans, other student veterans. And so there was a very strong sense of service involved in that. But the service to community, to vets, often can be experienced in the individual veteran as service to self. I mean, that it serves to help the person process their own experiences and understand and make meaning out of their experiences. And many of the experiences are difficult.
Yeah.
So not all, but many are difficult. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it sounds like a strategy then for military family service professionals would be to kind of just seeing that student veteran and that service member, where they're at, what their needs are, what their goals and their, you know, their hopes and dreams are to become, and maybe providing a different avenue instead of speaking about it, writing about it. I wonder if there's anything that professionals can do in that specific transitional piece. So when they're heading straight to the college campus, I wonder if you know of any other suggestions or any tips and strategies, you know, things like that, that might be able to help make that, especially the community colleges, become a little bit more veteran or military friendly.
I think I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think some other things that I would suggest are, I mean, clearly having spaces where veterans can find peers that can speak to them. So providing spaces. I do think that, you know, veterans clubs or allowing veterans to form their own clubs, but providing resources for that. And certainly this is well known in the literature in the GI Bill benefits. So it's really important to have somebody that can be a guide through that and help people with paperwork on that. So that, those are very practical things. Some more sort of conceptual tips that I would give is just to understand, especially when people are first separating from the military and going into this new world, there are going to be two steps forward, three steps back. I mean, it is not a linear process, and a lot of times people don't know what they want to study exactly. And so I think that community colleges are a great place to sort of try different things and figure out that, you know, yeah, this speaks to me, but this is not working for me, and I can't see myself doing this more. So just giving themselves, and hopefully the campus and the staff can give student veterans the space to sort of try things and the support to try things, and to know that if they take, you know, a class in anthropology or they take a class in engineering and it doesn't work for them, that doesn't mean it's over. That doesn't mean they don't have to be in school, or they shouldn't be in school, but mm-hmm. there's a lot of other things they can try. But it does take patience. Mm-hmm. And I would also, when I counsel people that have gone through major life transitions in general, I tell them that the best thing they can do for themselves is to not judge themselves, not be harsh on themselves, because there's work in the transition anyway. You know, mm-hmm. that is a job, is to transition.
Yeah, giving themselves some grace.
Yes, exactly. And that can hopefully carry them through the hard times, because that to not anticipate that it's going to be overwhelming and hard, but also not to anticipate that there's going to be no bumps in the road. So just to sort of be able to ride with it. I tell people for the first year, your job is to transition. So you will learn some things along the way, and that's good, and you'll get better and better and better. But just, you know, give yourself the space to try things out, to not, you know, to not always be successful. And that's hard. It's hard for every person, I think, to just forgive enough of themselves to know that we don't always, it's not always a straight line. And so I think that's what I would say. It's like, it's just recognize the transition for what it is, which is big, you know, it's major, and to give you the space to just, to try. And hopefully that your community and your family can also understand. I mean, I know that it might be easier said than done, but I also know that to not do that is much harder.
Yeah.
To have expectations and to say that, okay, this is how you were before, this is how you must be, this is how, and you were really good at what you did before, so you will be really good at this immediately. That's kind of a recipe for failure. I think it's to have expectations on people to immediately learn things and immediately shift. Very few people are able to do that. And I think it's just much better for everybody if the recognition that this is a big transition and there's a learning curve and it's okay. It's to be expected that there's a learning curve. One of the things, Jennifer, that I wanted to say is that is a different process than I spent a lot of time studying the process learning and basic training and boot camp. So that's a very different perspective, that you sort of take your time and you learn things and things don't work and you learn by sort of forgiving yourself. I think that's a very different mindset, because when the military is tasked with taking very, very diverse people with really different ideas of the world and different ideas of practice and different states of physical fitness, and the military is charged with in 6 weeks or 3 months or however long it takes, you know, a boot camp or basic training and individual training to turn them into a standardized uniform fighting force. I mean, that is the task. That is very, and in a very short time. Right. So the training tends to be very didactic, very high stakes, very, there is a right and a wrong answer, and you have to do the right answer. You have to have the right answer, because if you don't, people could be hurt. So that's a very different set and environment in which to learn. And I would say when in the civilian world, in the college, you know, and university world, it's almost the opposite. I don't believe in dichotomy, so I won't say it's just the opposite. There's a lot of contrast there, that, you know, people are encouraged to find the ambivalence, to sort of look at many different sides, to take their time to come up with arguments. I mean, it certainly in the humanities, it's like you're given these dense texts and have to sort of go through them and weigh the arguments and come back. So it's a very different stakes and very different style of learning. And so that was, for many, that's what disorienting.
Definitely. The way of thinking. So I think I read a research article that was talking about how the military is very much how to do, and the university is how to think.
Absolutely. And that was hard to make that transition.
Yeah. I wonder if, what kind of strategy or implication do you think that professionals could kind of help to organize students, veterans' frame of mind kind of around the way of thinking in higher education?
I think forecasting with them, you know, meeting, like having pre-meetings before they enter into the college campus would be helpful, just to have sort of, you know, groups or meetings to help explain the process and to explain some of these things, but also to meet periodically throughout sort of academic councils that could happen in best groups, but also just people, academic folks or professionals, or that we'll meet with them quarterly or, you know, a couple of times a semester just to see how things are going, mm-hmm. to problem solve as things come up, to support specifically around the transition to civilian norms and practices, basically, mm-hmm. sort of kind of just an ongoing wrap group, an ongoing group to figure out how it's going. I think that might be helpful. The vets groups provide that informally, but often they can serve to sort of reinforce the dichotomy between civilian and military. And often that's not helpful if somebody's really trying to learn the way to be successful in a civilian environment. It's not always helpful to have it, you know, military identity prioritized, privileged, and reinforced. So sometimes what people need is other spaces to learn that. So I would suggest that, you know, meet at pre-meetings before people start the camp, you know, on the campus, and then periodic meetings throughout their time, just to ongoing support for academic and emotional health.
Sure.
One thing that I found that was not helpful was expectations that every student vet would feel the same way about their military, would feel uniformly positive about their military experience. Many of the services are built on a singular and a positive identity about military experience, and that I found was not helpful for all veterans. I mean, for some it was, but for others it just served to marginalize them from, if that was the only narrative about veterans was a venerated all good narrative, and all positive narrative about military experience. If people didn't share that experience, if that wasn't their identity, they tended to be sort of marginalized from kind of any kind of support. And that is a shame. I mean, I don't think that's necessary and I don't think it's helpful.
Yeah. That's interesting.
So I would say just sort of recognizing that people have very different experiences in the military and holding that and honoring that.
Yeah. Being mindful of the various diversity of experiences.
Yeah.
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 That's very helpful. I think we're kind of coming to a closing end. I just wonder if there's any final thoughts that you might want to share that might be helpful for those military family service professionals, maybe a take-home message that you want to share with our listeners.
Well, as a teacher in the college classroom, I really appreciated many of the vets that were in my class. I thought that there was, for many of them, there was a maturity and there was a sense of work ethic and understanding that education is another job to do. And so I really appreciated that. So I guess closing thought would be, first and foremost, talk to the person in your life who's a veteran, a student veteran especially, get their perspective about how they feel, be open to whatever it is their experience is. You know, just to be open to it, to hold it, and to, you know, recognize that that's their experience. And to do, we all can do our best to welcome all students and to welcome students with different experience and to help. If student veterans' goals are to integrate into civilian society, to really try to facilitate that. And if their goals are to not necessarily maintain their military identity, that's okay as well. Mm-hmm. If their goals, on the other hand, are to want to be always involved with their military identity and keep maintaining that on the civilian campus, to find spaces for that. So my closing thoughts are really try to be where the student veteran is at and support them in what their goals are and understand that it's not a linear process, that but people will get there. People can get there with proper support. That's my closing thought.
I like those closing thoughts. I think those are very powerful and those will be very helpful for our listeners. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks so much for talking with me.
From all of us at the Military Families Learning Network Family Transitions team, we thank you so much for taking time to chat with us today, Dr. Moore. For those listening today, thank you for joining us. I encourage you to refer to the resources mentioned in this podcast on our website under the list entitled Additional Materials. We encourage our listeners to check out other podcasts, blogs, and free webinars from our Military Families Learning Network Family Transitions website at militaryfamilies.extension.org/family-transitions.
This material is based on work supported by the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Office of Military Family Readiness Policy, U.S. Department of Defense Award Number 2015-48770, 2-4-3-6-8.